it's good to be able to come together and have some camaraderie and fellowship. And I'm glad we can do it here in our new facility, the Matthews Community Center, and have Sunday morning worship here. Several months ago, I preached about King Hezekiah. And what we did was we looked at the story of King Hezekiah and asked the question, what happens when life changes? Because King Hezekiah had sort of come up to a sudden detour in the road and made a quick left turn on him. What happened was a king and his army, his substantial army, showed up at Hezekiah's door and said, we're going to come into Jerusalem and we're going to kill all you guys and we're going to, you know, string your heads up on poles and all kinds of ugly things, and we're going to burn everything down and take your people and yada yada. And so all of a sudden, Hezekiah has gone from having a very peaceful, placid, you know, going to school openings and things like that kind of a job, to all of a sudden now he's the defender of Israel. We looked at, what do you do when life changes? And I want to look at it again today from the standpoint of the story of Jacob and Laban. Remember, Laban was the one that had the two daughters. Jacob wanted to marry one of them, and Laban tricks him and gives him the other one first, Leah. The story starts in Genesis chapter 28, and we're going to look through a lot of that story. Let me encourage you to read that story, and we want to do it with the context or the thought in mind of what happens when life changes. What happens when you lose your job? What happens when you wake up one morning and realize, you know, marriage wasn't what I thought it was going to be, and it's not working out right? What happens when your wife or husband leaves? What happens when you're diagnosed with a terminal illness, especially an illness like the one Gene just succumbed to, that's one of these where the doctors say, well, we really don't know where it comes from, and there's really nothing we can do about it. I saw a picture a few days ago. I don't remember what it was, but they were showing a picture of, I think it was Desmond Tutu, one of the leaders in Africa, and the young Muhammad Ali. Anybody remember who Muhammad Ali was? He was Cassius Clay to start with, a boxer, black boxer. And then he became Muhammad Ali, traveled the world, became very famous, and he got stricken with, I think it's multiple sclerosis. And I mean, it just devastated his life. He went from being the one that dances like a butterfly and stings like a bee, you know, and a world champion boxer, to someone that had to have people help him get around. And what happens when your life completely changes like that? What happens when you realize, you know, this being a mother stuff or a dad wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be, and I don't know what to do, or I'm overwhelmed, or I'm out of control with my life or my house or my work or my job or whatever it is? What do you do when those things happen? We look at this story of Jacob because he had lots of obstacles in his way. There were lots of times that he would come up to something and all of a sudden life would throw him a bunch of lemons and he had to figure out how to make lemonade out of it. I mean, he was just in a situation of, well, man, now what am I going to do? He was threatened. His life was threatened. His family was threatened. His existence was threatened. But God had promised him that he was going to be a great man, part of this great nation of people that God was going to bless. And he hung on to that. And so let's just kind of go through the story, thinking about some of these things and look at and ask the question, what can we take from this? How can we either live our lives differently and emulate Jacob, or how can we say, well, you know, Jacob made some huge mistakes here, or Laban made some huge mistakes. We want to make sure we don't do those kind of things. You know, for the most part, I mean, a lot of the New Testament, the letters of Paul, is kind of theological writing, and so it would be more theory. The Bible for sure is not a scientific textbook, wasn't meant to be. I mean, I think that if you have the right understanding of science, the right understanding of the Bible, they're in perfect agreement. But most of the Bible is a collection of stories of how people interacted with each other, how they interacted with God, what God did in certain circumstances. And I think that the idea is, instead of God writing a list of all the to-dos and all the things we're supposed to do and not do, he said, let me show you real people interacting with me and with other people. I want to show you their mistakes. show you that they were real people, made mistakes just like you do, but I also want to show you how I help them and how I work miraculous things in their lives, and that'll happen to you too if you'll just walk in that, if you'll just believe that that's going to happen. And the other thing that you have to have, which we'll see that Jacob had, was, boy, do you have to have patience. Because, I mean, we start hurting, we realize things aren't going the way we thought they were going to go, and we're ready for God to change it. Not tomorrow or the next day, we're ready for God to change it right now. I can promise you, if I get a bad headache, I'm ready for God to heal me right then, not next week sometime. Sometimes we have to learn to be patient with some of these things. Well, follow along with me. We're not going to exactly read every verse and every chapter, but we're going to follow this story, and I want to encourage you to read it. I don't know if we'll continue next week or not. If we do, make sure you have read this whole story before we come back together again next week. And bring with you some of the things you've gotten out of this. I'd love to hear you share that stuff. So Isaac called Jacob. Now, remember, Jacob and Esau were brothers. Isaac was Abraham's son. Remember the one that was going to be sacrificed? God said, sacrifice your son for me. But then God changed that. That was Isaac. And then Isaac has two sons. He has Esau and Jacob. And Jacob tricks Esau, with the help of his mother, into getting the birthright blessing, the primary blessing. Okay, now after that, after he's been tricked, Isaac calls Jacob, and he blessed him, and he charged him, and he said to him, you shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. In other words, where we're living now. Arise, go to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father. That's his relatives on his mother's side. And there take to yourself a wife from the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. So those would be cousins. Is that right? So he's saying, don't take these heathen women to marry. You need to go marry as part of our family, because the blessings of Abraham are supposed to flow to our family. And then he says, may God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may become a company of peoples. In other words, you may have lots of descendants. And may he also give you the blessing of Abraham to you and your descendants with you, that you may possess the land of your sojournings, which God gave to Abraham. So Isaac is making sure that Jacob understands this blessing that God gave Abraham, this covenant that God made with Abraham, extends to you and to all of your descendants. And you want to operate in that. Turn to Galatians 3, and I want to show you something. And that is that the work that Jesus did on the cross extended that blessing of Abraham to us. Remember all of the places in the Old Testament it says, okay, this is the way it works. You can either have blessings or cursings. If you do what I, God, says you're supposed to do, then you'll be blessed. If you don't do that, you're going to be cursed. And it lists all kinds of curses and blessings and things like that. Well, in Galatians 3, starting in verse 13, Paul explains to us that Christ redeemed or purchased or bought us from the curse of the law. In other words, when Jesus buys us, he says you no longer have to operate under the curse of the law. Having become a curse for us, for it is written that cursed is everyone who hangs on a tree, Jesus became a curse for us in order that in Christ Jesus the blessing of Abraham might come to the Gentiles, so that we might receive the promise of the Spirit through faith. So all the blessings of Abraham, all the blessings of the Old Testament, all the good things that God said would happen if we serve Him, we get those because Jesus paid that price so we could. So Isaac passed that blessing on down to Jacob. Eventually, through Christ, the seed of Abraham, that blessing passes on down to us. Now, this must have made a big impression on Jacob, because he really hung on to this idea. I'm special with God, and God's promised some things to me, and he's going to bless me, and I'm just going to keep hanging on until he does. There are several places where it talks about how Jacob hung on. We'll see that. Then Isaac sent Jacob away. He sent him to Padan Aram, to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Aramean, the brother of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau. Now Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob, and had sent him away to Padan Aram. Now, remember, Esau is Jacob's brother. Esau's jealous of Jacob. Seems like everything goes right for Jacob and nothing goes right for Esau. And he saw how Isaac had blessed Jacob, sent him off to get a wife. And of course, Jacob obeys his father. And look what Esau did in verse 8. So Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan displeased his father. And Esau went to Ishmael and married, besides the wives that he had, these daughters of Ishmael, just to spite his dad. And he marries daughters of not Abraham's side of the family, not Isaac's side of the family, but Ishmael's side of the family. And you have to ask the question, you know, they had to be telling the stories about Abraham. That's how they kept the stories so that they could eventually be recorded in Genesis. They were verbal history through stories. They had a verbal history. They didn't have a written history. They had a verbal history, and they passed down from generation to generation what was going on. You know they had to have told the story about how Abraham, with his lack of faith, instead of waiting for Sarah to become pregnant, he gets the maid pregnant. And Ishmael is the result of that, and it causes a big stink. It's a big problem. You know, you would think from that Esau would go, maybe I don't want to have anything to do with that. But oh no, to spite his daddy, he's going to go. I just wonder sometimes at the folks, I've watched young people, men and women, marry somebody they know their parents don't like. And sometimes they do it out of spite, or they do it just so they can get out of the house. I'm just so anxious to get away from my parents, I'll marry the first guy that comes along. And they are miserable. They sometimes are miserable for the rest of their lives. They just, well, I know a lot of folks who've been a victim of that. Yeah, some of us here have been victims of that. So, poor Esau. So Esau gets a left turn in life. He gets handed a sack of lemons, and instead of making lemonade out of it, he just eats the lemons. You know, he says, well, I'm just going to do things in spite of my dad. I'm going to hate my brother. I'm going to set out to kill my brother eventually. I'm going to marry the wrong women. Anyway, Jacob didn't do that. He takes the worst and he tries to make the best out of it. I mean, when your dad says you got to leave home, go find a wife somewhere else, that's not necessarily the easiest thing to do. He probably wasn't expecting that. Then Jacob departed from Beersheba and he went toward Haran, and he came to a certain place and he spent the night there because the sun had set. And he had a dream, and behold, there was a ladder that was sitting on the earth, and its top was reaching into heaven, and angels of God were both going up and down on that ladder. And so he looks at that place, and he says, man, this is a holy place. And he has a vision where God begins to speak to him and talk about how he's going to bless his descendants. And in verse 15, and behold, I am with you, and I will keep you wherever you go, and I will bring you to this land, and I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. I'll bet you that Jacob, when he wakes up in the morning and finds Leah in the bed with him instead of Rachel, he remembers this and says, God, I thought you promised that you were going to do all kinds of good things for me and bring me to a good place. What's this? And he could have said, well, God, if that's the way you're going to treat me, I'm just going to go do my own thing. I'm going to, you know, whatever. But he didn't do that. He said, no, God promised, and no matter what it looks like, no matter how bad things look, no matter how different than I expected things look, I got to trust that God's going to take care of me, because he promised he would. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep, and he said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I didn't know it. And he was afraid, and he said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Now, that wasn't the case. It wasn't really the gate of heaven. He just thought it was because of this, you know, if God shows up in a place where you think, oh, this must be the only place that God's going to show up in. Interestingly enough, he says, this is the house of God because God's here. And so for him, the idea of leaving that place was difficult because he wanted to stay where God was. The New Testament teaches us that we are the house of God. And so wherever we go, God goes with us. I mean, that's just how it works. And so we can have that kind of assurance, especially when things seem to be going wrong. We can have the assurance, I am the house of God. Whether I feel like it or not, no matter how depressed I feel, no matter how fearful I feel, no matter how wronged or sad or forgotten or whatever I feel, no matter how out of control I feel, God's with me. I am God's house. I'm telling you, when you recognize that, I've been in these places where life has taken a wrong turn, or where I've realized this wasn't what I expected, or I don't think this is what I signed up for, didn't mean to sign up for it, if it's going to be like this. And I can tell you that when I realize, oh yeah, just a minute, hold on here, I'm God's, I belong to Him, He is with me, He's living in me. Wherever I go, He's going with me, and He's promised to take care of me. It may not change the circumstances immediately, but it sure changes how I look at them and how I view them. And I think it changes the eventual outcome, because if I stay in the fear, if I stay in the depression, if I stay in the this wasn't what I thought it was going to be, or I don't think I can get over this, if I stay in that place, it could be years before I get over it, decades. But if I start saying, no, I'm God's child, I have been bought with a price, I've got the promises of God, I have been given all the promises of Abraham, and I can walk in those, then I got a chance of coming out of it, because my faith is in the right place. So anyway, Jacob gets up early in the morning, and he essentially builds a landmark there with some rocks, so that it's obvious to him and to anybody else that may come there that God was there, and that, you know, it can remind him of what was going on. And he dedicates this place to God. But he knows that this is just part of his journey. He knows he's got to continue on to Haran. And so he goes on to Haran in chapter 29, and he finds a well. There are three different flocks of sheep there that are being shepherded by men, and they're waiting at this well. And this is the middle of the day. And Jacob's kind of wondering, well, what's going on here, guys? You know, by this time of day, you need to be out in the pasture with the sheep. And they said, well, nobody's rolled the stone away from the well so that we can get to it. Now, I don't know why these boys didn't do it, but they didn't. So about this time, let's see, he asks them if they're from Haran. They say they are. And he asks them if they know of Laban. Yes, we know of him. Is it well with him? Yes, it is well. And, oh, not only is everything okay with Laban, look, down the road here is Rachel, his daughter, coming with his sheep. So Rachel was actually a shepherdess, you could say. And that's kind of unusual in those days. Maybe Laban at that point still didn't have any boys, didn't have any sons. He sees Rachel coming, and so he rolls the stone away from the mouth of the well so that Rachel and everybody else can water their sheep. And while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep. And in verse 10, and it came about that when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went up and he rolled the stone from the mouth of the well and he watered the flock. And then Jacob kissed Rachel and he lifted his voice and he wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and that he was actually Rebekah's son. And so she ran and she told her father. And it came about that when Laban heard the news of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him, and he embraced him, and he kissed him, and he brought him to his house. And Jacob related all the things that had happened. And Laban says, surely you are my bone and my flesh. And so Jacob stayed there with him for a month. And then Laban said to Jacob, because you're my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me what shall be your wages. Now, based on that comment, I'm guessing that what happened was when Jacob showed up there at Laban's place and stayed there a month, Jacob didn't just sit around and play Xbox and eat grapes while everybody else worked. It looks to me like that Jacob said, I'm going to be productive. And he chipped in and he helped with what work that was going on. Because after a month of this, Laban says, well, you shouldn't work for nothing. You know, I mean, you're getting room and board all right, but you're working hard. What do you want me to pay you? So I think Jacob was being an honorable man here. And as we see, although Laban asked the question, what should your wages be? And sounds like maybe he's trying to be honorable. He has a hard time being an honorable man. Now, Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were weak. The name Leah means weary. So she was probably slow, or she said she had weak eyes, you know, she probably wasn't very intelligent, that sort of thing. And she apparently wasn't very beautiful either, because it says Rachel was beautiful of form and face. That's a special lady. And so Jacob fell in love with Rachel, and he says, how about this? I'll serve you for 7 years if you give me Rachel as my wife, your daughter Rachel. Now remember, in those days, that was kind of how things were done. You didn't just start dating and have fun and then decide to marry and go off and live somewhere. The boys were expected to find wives, and when they found a wife, they were expected to reimburse the wife's parents for that woman leaving the farm, essentially. And so she's not going to be around to help bear children or help work or be a maid or whatever she would have been. And so you need to kind of pay us for lost wages. And so Jacob says, okay, how about 7 years? I'm willing to work 7 years. And Laban says, it is better that I give her to you than I should give her to another man. Stay with me. In other words, he agreed to it. Jacob serves Laban for 7 years. And all this time, all he can think of is Rachel, right? One day she's going to be my wife. Has anybody here waited 7 years for their husband, knowing who their husband was, or wife? I mean, that's a long time. It's a long time to work thinking, just think, in only 6 more years, we'll be able to be married. Now, the 7 years comes to an end. Then Jacob said to Laban, okay, give me my wife, my time is up. And Laban gathered all the men in the place, and he made a feast. And apparently this was kind of the custom of the time, is when there was a marriage, you had a feast, and that feast would last about a week. So it was a big deal. Bring all the relatives, all the friends, all the important people in at different times during this week. Now it came about in the evening that he took his daughter Leah and brought her to him, and Jacob went in to her. Laban also gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came about in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And Jacob said to Laban, what is this that you've done with me? Was it not Rachel that I served you for? Why have you deceived me? Now, for us in our society, we look at that and think, that's weird. Wait, how in the world can you accidentally spend the night with somebody else? How can you accidentally get the wrong wife? Well, first of all, remember, the women stayed covered up most of the time in that society. And you also have to remember that the wedding traditions then were really very different from ours. You know, for us now, a man and woman get married and they go off on their honeymoon and nobody knows where they're going to spend their wedding night. In these days, everybody knew where you were going to spend their wedding night. And as a matter of fact, the bridegroom and maybe and other people, sometimes the mother of the bride, were staying there outside the house or the room that the new bride and groom were in. As a matter of fact, some of the traditions, in the morning, the mother would go in and take the sheet, the bed sheet, and bring it out and show everybody the blood on the sheet to prove that her daughter had been a virgin. See, I mean, it was a kind of a public thing, and so it was pretty much a quiet thing. I mean, it's not how much noise are you going to make when everybody's around you, right? It's plumb dark in there. There are no candles. There are no light switches. You don't know. And apparently there wasn't much small talk in those days. And so Jacob doesn't know it's Leah till he wakes up in the morning and he gets her out in the light. And he goes, oh, golly, what is this? You talk about life taking a left turn. You talk about, this was not what I signed up for. You talk about, this isn't what I expected. Uh-oh, now what am I going to do? Well, in our society, yes, it might be a big surprise to see your wife, your new wife, for the first time without her makeup. And you go, oh, wow, I didn't know that. But this is not makeup we're talking about here. Now, what would you do in that situation? Been tricked. I mean, you know, daddy has told you, you got to find one of these girls to marry. And you've married one. It just happens to be the wrong one. I mean, you're going to kill Laban. You're going to kill her. You're going to divorce her. You're going to annul the marriage. I mean, what are you going to do? And this is where we see the character of Jacob come in here. Now, Laban's excuse. This is Laban's excuse. Well, you can't expect me to marry off the younger one first. I mean, we got to marry off the oldest daughter first, so you had to take her. Just work for me another 7 years, and I'll give you Rachel. Just stay with Leah. Don't give her up. And he says, complete the week of this one, verse 27. and we'll give you the other one for your service with me for another 7 years. Now, at that point, I'm not sure I'd have wanted to believe the boy. You know, I go, why, yeah, sure, Laban. But Jacob did so, and he completed her week. I think that completing the week, and most folks tend to think this is the case, when it says that Jacob completed the week with Leah, that means that this week-long feast, this big, long public celebration, and he didn't put Laban to shame by saying publicly, Laban tricked me, this is not what I wanted, I'm not going through with this, you all just might as well go home. I mean, he could have done that. And Laban said, whatever you do, don't do that. Don't embarrass me in front of my friends. No, just live the rest of your life with a woman you didn't want to live with so that you don't embarrass my friends. Good grief. But Jacob says, I'll do that. He completed the week with her, and then he gave his daughter Rachel as wife. Laban also gave his maid Bilhah and his daughter Rachel as her maid. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and indeed he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban for another 7 years. So Laban lets him marry both girls, but still requires him to work the additional 7 years for that wife. And although there are lots of things that Jacob could have done and said, he didn't run away, he didn't quit, he continued to just plod along. I mean, that kind of working for 7 years, that's just putting one foot in front of another. There's nothing inspirational about that. There's nothing exciting about that. There's no, oh boy, I can hardly wait to get up in the morning and go out and take care of this other guy's sheep so that I can keep the wife that I've got. I mean, you know, this is just muddling through. But that's what he did when he got faced with a left turn in life, with something unexpected, with a situation of how in the world am I going to deal with this? This wasn't what all I exactly signed up for. And I'll stop there. We'll continue this story next week. Remember now, we have moved out of the house. We've always said we're not a house church, and we're not meeting in a house anymore. We're meeting at the Matthews Community Center in downtown Matthews. That's at 100 East McDowell Street in room 201. Sunday morning services are at 10 o'clock sharp. Check out our website for details, www.cecmessiah.org, and come visit us on a Sunday morning. Great things happen here. God shows up here every Sunday morning. Come check it out. Let us pray for you. Let God bless you. Get directions at cecmessiah.org. And then come worship with us Sunday morning. You'll find it a unique experience.